You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. It is Friday morning, 8:45 Central Time. It is time to check in with Pastor Worth, Fourth Creation Club. Good morning, Pastor Worth.
Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I am doing well. Happy Friday. Happy Creation Club Day.
And first day of May. Happy May Day.
Is indeed, indeed. Happy May Day, Pastor. What do you have for us this week in Topics in Creation?
Well, the thing I'd like to talk about in the time we have together today is the Mount St. Helens volcano. This month will be the anniversary of that. It happened in May 18th, 1980. Were you even born yet?
Yes.
You're a little tyke, probably. I don't know if you remember anything about the Mount St. Helens volcano, but it was a huge, huge eruption, and one of the greatest volcanic events in North America. And the lessons for the creation versus evolution topic are fantastic because, you know, so many times the people who believe the evolutionary fairy tale dream up their stories of millions and billions of years, and they assume that all kinds of things would have taken millions and billions of years. For example, that it would have taken millions and billions of years for the sedimentary rock layers to be formed gradually over a very slow and gradual process for the sedimentary rock layers to be laid up. And then also then at the Grand Canyon or something like this, it would take millions and millions of years for it to erode. If you had something like the Colorado River just gradually eroding that canyon system at the rate of erosion that we could measure today. So they look at things that happen today and assume that you can just extrapolate backwards and that this was just a long, slow, gradual process. But there's not really a way to test that, is there? Because we can't go back millions and billions of years, so there's a lot of assumptions going on. But with the eruption of Mount St. Helens, May 18th, 1980, and in its aftermath, we have a laboratory, as it were, where people in the present day have been able to see the before and the after, to watch the process happening, and it's astonishing. And in the most recent issue of Answers Magazine, the spring issue of Answers Magazine, there's a wonderful article about it. Actually, it's an assembly of several short articles, and I highly recommend that our listeners try to get a copy of this. It's really good. You can get it from answersingenesis.org. It's available at the Creation Museum, so check it out. Mm-hmm. The authors are Dr. Andrew Snelling, who holds a PhD in geology from the University of Sydney, Australia.
Mm-hmm. Familiar name.
Yes. He's one of the experts at the Creation Museum. Also, Tom Hennigan is an associate professor of biology at Truett-McDonnell College, where he teaches organic biology and ecology, and also then Dr. Joe Francis, a chairperson of the Department of Biological and Physical Sciences and Department of Mathematics at the Master's College. He earned his PhD from Wayne State University and completed postdoctoral fellowship at the University of Michigan Medical School. So these guys are smart guys. They know what they're talking about. And they also have investigated this along with many other scientists, including the ones that believe in evolution. And there are a number of lessons that we need to touch upon, more than we probably have time to talk about in detail today. But if you get this article, you can read about them. So, for example, first of all, you need to understand that on May 18th, 1980, when the Mount St. Helens blew up, it was the equivalent of 20 megatons of TNT. And when the whole thing continued to blow for like 9 hours, the total energy output during that 9-hour eruption was equivalent to 440 million tons of TNT. That is approximately 33,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs. That's about one such atomic bomb exploding every second for 9 hours. That's a lot of power. And it's astonishing what that, you know, so this teaches us something about the power of a sudden cataclysmic event. So instead of taking millions and billions of years, we see that God, using his power in just a very short time in a work of nature like this, one of part of his creation, he's able to change the landscape drastically. For example, they talk about the ash cloud. The ash cloud was blasted like 16 miles high. It removed about two-thirds of a cubic mile of rock from the top of the mountain. The ash cloud blanketed 11 states and several Canadian provinces with dust. Some towns were engulfed in complete darkness. And what happened, it even just this one volcano, which is not a really, really big volcano as the history of volcanoes, yet it would manage to cool the Earth a fraction of a degree. So you say, wow, that's a huge, huge event. Imagine if you had a lot of volcanoes going off simultaneously, as some scientists, especially those who believe in the flood of Noah's day, think that that actually happened, and how that could have brought on not only the great flood of Noah's day, but then an ice age that followed it. Very fascinating to study the ash cloud and its significance. The vertical floaters, you know, that there were 200-some square miles of forest that in just a matter of minutes were completely leveled and destroyed. 230 square miles of tall Douglas fir trees that are 200 feet tall were just wiped out, stripped of their branches, snapped like toothpicks, and many of them wound up in nearby Spirit Lake. And many of them were floating vertically rather than horizontally. So even though they'd been snapped off and they didn't have all their roots, they would float vertically with the root end down, and then after a period of time, they would sink, and they were deposited on the bottom of the lake as sediment was building up around them. And so, and since that time, people have gone down with underwater gear or scuba divers and stuff to see, and sure enough, there a lot of them are planted downstairs at the bottom of the lake as though they had been a forest over different time periods. So go over to Yellowstone Park, and we have the Specimen Ridge there and the Petrified Forest. And the historic teaching of that is that that's forest, the fossil remains of forests over millions and billions of years, different forests growing at different times. But now we saw something in real time happening. You say, you know, what's more likely is that during the flood of Noah's day, you had a lot of trees wiped out in a short time, and that they would have floated upright and also sunk after they became saturated, and then being planted at the sea bottom vertically, and then the sediment continually raining down around them and burying them at different levels, instead of being a whole bunch of different forests over a great period of time. One great cataclysmic event, like the Great Flood of Noah's Day, could explain how you'd have this petrified forest where it looks like a bunch of different forests, but actually, you know, over a vast time period, but the sediment layers build up very quickly, and the logs settled upright, as in the case here that we saw in our own lifetime happening at Spirit Lake with the Mount St. Helens volcano. Also, there's the whole matter of bark, peat, and coal. What they found is that these logs formed a huge log mat on Spirit Lake, and the wind would blow them back and forth across the lake. And as they would, you know, be blown back and forth across the lake, they would rub up against each other. The bark would be rubbed off the trees, and the bark sank and became layers of sediment at the bottom of the lake. And when people who have studied coal, like Dr. Steve Austin, a geologist, has studied this for a long time, he says this really looks like how coal was formed, that after the Great Flood of Noah's Day, you would have had all kinds of trees that had been wiped out through the cataclysmic events of the flood, floating in log mats on the surface of the waters, rubbing against each other, the bark falling off and making thick layers of sediment that were turned into coal. And he says that that really fits much better than the long time period explanation for coal to form from peat. And the article explains how this is a much better explanation. And again, it's something we've actually observed happening in a short time in our own lifetime. Pyroclastic deposits. This is one of the most fascinating things, to see how with the explosion of Mount St. Helens, there were a whole bunch of different earth-shaping forces that were unleashed all at once. The original blast of air was followed by landslides, volcanic ash flowing on the ground, mud flows, a stream of water, and falling volcanic ash. Even the water in the nearby Spirit Lake was temporarily pushed out of its basin and came crashing back into place. These catastrophes produced complex sedimentary layers up to 600 feet thick. The most surprising accumulations resulted from several slurries of volcanic ash that moved out from where the volcano was at velocities estimated to be up to 80 miles per hour. These deposits were filled with different layers, including many fine volcanic ash beds ranging in thickness from a tiny fraction of an inch to 3 feet. Each bed was laid in just seconds to several minutes. One such layered deposit, 25 feet thick, accumulated within only 3 hours during the evening of June 12, 1980. And it came from volcanic ash flows moving at a hurricane velocity of 90 miles per hour. Geologists were staggered that so many varied sedimentary layers, both fine and coarse, containing thin horizontal layers, cross-bedding and graded bedding, could be produced by such slurry moving at more than freeway speed. So you think about this and think, wow. So instead of taking millions and millions of years for all this sediment to be laid down, you know, it happened in a matter of hours and days instead of millions and billions of years. And then, conversely, how about erosion? There's a little Grand Canyon that formed later because nearly 2 years after the original eruption, on March 19, 1982, the hot volcanic ash from another explosive eruption on Mount St. Helens melted thick snowpack at the crater, creating destructive sheet-like flood water and mud, which became a mud flow, reaching the earlier deposits blocking Spirit Lake. The flow cut channels through the debris at a speed of 40 miles per hour. Individual canyons up to 140 feet deep appeared in a single day. And they went on to say that basically they formed, in some places, they cut 600 feet deep. And what you had is a 1/40th scale model of the Grand Canyon eroded very, very rapidly. So instead of a little water over a vast amount of time, it was a whole lot of water in a very short amount of time that eroded this canyon system. And again, geologists would not have believed it had they not actually seen it. And now, in our own time, we had God giving us this laboratory. We can say, well, what do you know? Maybe the Grand Canyon didn't take millions and billions of years to form. And there are many more things than we have time to get into. The lava dome and radiometric dating, the recovery of soil at the site, rapid animal recovery after the blast. There's so many more things to check out in that article. Whether we get a chance to talk here on the air again, otherwise people check it out. The Answers in Genesis Magazine, Answers Magazine for spring of 2015. Wonderful articles that point to the truth of God's word, creation, and the great flood of Noah's day.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Pastor, for pointing us to that and helping us learn all these little things that make up a difference every day and how we look at creation around us and how it all points to the one true creator and, most importantly, Jesus Christ, our one true Savior.
Absolutely.
God's blessings, Pastor. Have a great week.
God bless you, too.
Thanks. Bye now. Morning prayer coming up in just a little bit on Worldwide KFUO.